Well, Beth's reading, I think, was pretty much the whole sermon, so I think I'm done, actually. Right? So who here knows the significance of this Sunday in the church calendar year? Don't be shy. Thank you. Anyone else? Anyone else? Yes. Christ the King Sunday. That's exactly right. And of course, Christ the King Sunday gives us the opportunity to talk about two of the great kings of our faith. That is King David and then our King, Jesus, the King of Heaven. So today we're wrapping up a series that we began back in October, Sunday School, Christ and the Stories of Our Youth. And the story that we're looking at today is obviously David and Goliath. So here's what I want to do. Here's where I'm going with this, okay? I'd like to take a little bit of a look at David. And I'd like to just, because he's such a preeminent figure in the Old Testament. Then I'd like to kind of set up this battle between these two competitors. And then after that, I'd like to draw some similarities between Jesus and David, between their stories, if you will. And then we'll close by looking at where are we in this story? Where do we show up in this picture, okay? And I'm going to do that all in 21 minutes, and if anyone wants to time me, go ahead. So let's look at David's background for just a minute. Again, he was such a preeminent figure. He was David, of course, means beloved, and he was the second king of the United Kingdom of Israel. David was an ancestor of Jesus, and that's obviously very, very important. His life was dated from 1040 to 970 BC, and in 1010, at the age of 30, he ascended to his throne. David was born in Bethlehem, part of the tribe of Judah. He was the youngest son of Jesse, his father. Now, some of those things might sound familiar to you. And then according to the biblical narrative, God instructed the prophet Samuel to anoint a new king from Jesse's sons because Saul had disobeyed the Lord. So Samuel did just as he was told. He anoints a new king. But he's surprised to find actually out that David has been the one who has been chosen because David was the youngest son. It was kind of broke the cultural norm of the time. The other important kind of piece of information in this picture, or kind of background information, if you will, is what's known as the Davidic covenant. And that's really important also, the Davidic covenant. God, speaking through a prophet, told David in 2 Samuel 7:17, "I will make sure that one of your descendants will always be king." Now, why is that significant? Why is this important? Because the messianic expectation, the expectation was that the Messiah would be an ancestor, if you will, of David. That the Messiah, who would usher in an eternal kingdom, ruled by an eternal king, would come from the lineage of David. And of course, Jesus was the fulfillment of that promise of God. And Jesus, who was also no doubt proud to be referred to sometimes in Scripture as the son of David. Obviously not the literal son of David, but descendant of David, the fulfillment of the Davidic covenant that God had made, the promise that God had made that the Messiah would come from the lineage of David. Now, let's kind of hit the pause button for just one second and kind of review a few of kind of the significant intersections, if you will, between David and Jesus, their lives, if you will, their stories, I should say. First of all, David ascended to the throne at the age of 30, and Jesus began his public spirit-filled ministry at the age of 30, right? They were both born in Bethlehem. And then, of course, the other significant kind of intersection of their stories is the Davidic covenant, in which David would provide, through his heritage, would be provided the Messiah, which is, of course, Jesus, whose kingdom will have no end. So that's a little bit about David's story, but how about these Philistines? Where do they kind of come from? Well, Philistines occupied a part of southwest Palestine. Of course, the word Palestine, word Philistine, sounds similar, come from the same root word. Now, the Philistines had kind of tormented, if you will, for 200 years. They, even though they were militarily advanced, above the Israelite army, they had just kind of gotten into their business for a couple of hundred years, wreaked havoc with them. They didn't get along at the time, and they don't get along today. And that's part of the point of this, is just to look at the extremely long history of this protracted conflict in the Middle East that goes back 3,000 years. So, finally, this brings us to the story of David and Goliath. Israel had been in conflict, as I said, with the Philistines for a couple of hundred years, and they had won their share of battles. But this scene, this particular scene, starts with both of these armies gathered in the Valley of Elah, which is about 20 miles west of Bethlehem and Jerusalem. And as the Israelite and the Philistine armies were prepared for battle, the worst thing happens. You know, Goliath emerges. This giant of a man covered in bronze armor emerges, and he taunts the Israelite army. And for 40 days, he comes forward, and he dares the Israelite army to send forth their greatest warrior so that Goliath and their warrior could settle this mano a mano, right? Could go at it one-on-one. The Israelite army didn't want to have anything to do with Goliath because, in fact, I think this was no ordinary battle. This was no ordinary battle. In the end, there would be only one victor, either David or Goliath. And it would be determined by the one sole representative that each army sent forward. In Goliath's words, if Israel killed Goliath, then the Philistines would come and serve under the people of Israel. But if Goliath won, the people of Israel would be subjected under the Philistines. It's no ordinary battle. And it's no wonder that no one from Israel really wanted to respond to Goliath's challenge. It would take a special kind of leader, a special kind of person who would be willing to put their life on the line for their whole people. Of course, that leader emerges, and it's David. It's David, who was sent by his father Jesse to go check on his brothers, Jesse's other sons, who were at the front lines. And once there, David hears the insults and he hears the taunts of Goliath, and he's incensed. He is really mad. And here's what he says. Who does that worthless Philistine think he is? He's making fun of the army of the living God. And then David recalls the training that he's had for just this moment in fighting off bears and lions as a shepherd boy. And he says, I've killed lions and bears that way, and I can kill this worthless Philistine. He shouldn't have made fun of the army of the living God. And then as David approaches Goliath, Goliath thinks it's a joke, right? I mean, how could this Israelite army send forward this little runt of a guy to go into hand-to-hand combat with Goliath? But they do. But David was completely confident because he knew that God was with him. He knew that God would bring him this victory. And as David draws closer to the giant Philistine, he places a stone in his sling. And you know the story, and he sends it sailing to Goliath. The stone hits Goliath in the forehead. I think it even says it embedded in his forehead. Oh, sorry, too much detail. Goliath does a face plant. David comes forward, grabs Goliath's sword, and cuts his head off. Wow, I know, it's like PG. Sorry, guys. Yeah, and then the Philistine army is demoralized. They retreat, only to be crushed by the pursuing Israelite army. Job done. David is the hero, and he's on his way to becoming the greatest king of Israel. Now, this story has excited, you know, boys and girls, you know, for generation upon generation. Here, having your parents tell them this story. You know, we were just kind of doing some planning for this service, and it was just fun watching Seth light up, telling us about how this is his little three-year-old son, Charlie's favorite story. But this is one of those really familiar stories, and it's also, I think, one of the most unlikely of victories, right? But which of us doesn't, you know, like to hear this story about this mocking giant wearing this impenetrable armor, right, who was felled by a small stone being cast by a small boy? David is the ultimate action hero. Yes. You know, as an aside, with all the violence and sex involved in David's life, don't you wonder why Hollywood hasn't made a movie of this? I don't know. So anyway, there are lots of kind of lessons and things that we could draw from this story, but there is one in particular that means a lot to me personally, and I would just like to share that with you. And it is this, that the Lord always prepares those whom he calls. The Lord always prepares those whom he calls. David, the most unlikely of candidates to be called by God, was prepared by God for just this mission. David really wasn't skilled at war, but he did fight off lions and bears. And with each success, he gained confidence. And he knew that he was being prepared for future battles. God calls him then into this battle. When you and I are called by God, we can be confident that God will equip us. He will prepare us to respond to his call. One of the most significant transitions I've made in my life was when I moved from the business sector into coming and being a part of the staff of Christ Church to lead and direct the Alpha course here. But it was amazing, really. I knew that, when Diane and I were having conversations about this, I knew that God had prepared me for just this call. I knew it, because as I look back, shortly after becoming a Christian, I immediately got into a relational small group, and that had been so important in my spiritual formation. And then, of course, Alpha. The heart of Alpha is a relational small group experience. I had a passion for helping people find their way back to God, and watching people's faith come alive. And that is so much a part of the story of Alpha over the last two decades, just as people respond to God and their faith comes alive. I also loved to just kind of help challenge leaders to go deeper, to take the next step, maybe outside their comfort zone. And again, that's a large part of what Alpha is, leadership development. As people come from being a guest to then a host in a group, which is kind of a low bar leadership position, and then being a leader in the group, and then just watching leaders kind of step out of their comfort zone. God prepares those whom he calls. And while David was a little shepherd boy, I doubt that he had any idea that he was actually in God's training school for kings. And I didn't really have any idea during my spiritual formation that God was preparing me for a call, like coming, joining part of the Christ Church staff to lead Alpha. And so that's why this means a lot to me, this kind of particular lesson, because I want to encourage you. Whatever experience you're having right now in terms of serving God, whether it's, being on a hospitality team, getting ready for the magical Snow Globes concert experience, or whether it's serving on Alpha or being in a small group, or going out and serving our community or Trailwood, wherever, consider the possibility that God may be preparing you for something he is calling you into next. God always prepares those whom he calls. So how do we see Christ in this story? And at what point, how does this story actually point to Jesus? What are some of the parallels between the stories of Jesus and the story of David? One of the parallels is this, that God chooses the unimpressive, the unlikely, and often the unexpected to win the greatest battles in human history. David, totally unexpected, really. A small shepherd boy ascends to king. Jesus, likewise, the Bible never refers to Jesus' stature, if you will. So we have to assume he was just kind of an average, size guy. David, a little shepherd boy, right? Unlikely. Jesus, a carpenter. And while oftentimes we look at the status or the stature of a person, God looks at the size of their heart. And that's what has happened here. And God also chooses the most unlikely path for both of these men. You know, we've already talked a little bit about David's story, but look at the irony of Jesus' life. You know, and as a king, right, the king of heaven and earth, instead of being born in a royal palace, he's born in a manger. Instead of there being all this pomp and circumstance surrounding his birth, his arrival, there's just kind of this sense of humility. You know, instead of him arriving in Jerusalem in an armed chariot, he arrives on a donkey. Instead of wearing a crown of gold, he's wearing a crown of thorns. Instead of this majestic throne that a king should sit on, he's hanging on a cross. We also see the relationship between David and Jesus, and that they are both God's chosen soul representatives. You know, this was no ordinary battle. Either David or Goliath was going to win. They were going to come out the victor. And whichever lost, their entire people would come under subjection of the victor. But David, God's chosen soul representative, won the battle over the worst possible enemy, Goliath, this giant of a man. And all of Israel got to participate in his victory. His victory was their victory. And Jesus was also sent by his Father, chosen as God's sole representative in the greatest spiritual battle of human history, of humankind. If he lost, we all lose forever, for all of eternity, coming under subjection of the worst possible enemy. But Jesus won on the cross through his death and resurrection. He defeated the ultimate enemies, Satan, sin, and death. And all who put their trust in him get to participate in his victory. His victory is also our victory. And that's good news. The Apostle Paul put it this way. He said, "For just as through the disobedience of one man, Adam, the many were made sinners, so through the obedience of the one man, Jesus, many were made righteous." And that's good news. That is good news. Jesus is the more perfect David. David was the greatest of the kings of Israel. Jesus is the eternal king, the true king, whose reign will last forever and ever. So who are we in this story? Do you see yourself in this story at all? I do. And if I had to kind of look at something that would represent me, it would be the Israelite army. Kind of paralyzed in fear, cowering in fear as they wait to face their great enemy. You know, I think a lot of times you and I can't speak for you, I feel like I don't have the power to face my greatest enemies. So what are the obvious Goliaths in your life right now? What causes you sleepless nights? What paralyzes you with fear, brings you anxiety? What causes you to cower, figuratively? What is the Goliath in your life? A lot of times we just don't feel like we have the power to face it, particularly face it alone. But the good news is we don't have to. We don't have to face our Goliaths alone. Just as David felled the terrifying Goliath, this giant of a man, with the most unlikely weapon, a small stone, Jesus, an even more perfect David, won his victory with even a more unlikely weapon, that is, the love of God that sent him to the cross. And we no longer have to be paralyzed with fear in facing the Goliaths in our life, because Jesus has won the battle which we could never win on our own. So as we wrap up this Sunday, this series, Sunday School, Christ and the Stories of Our Youth, kind of put a bow on it today, in just a moment I'd like to watch a video. But before we do that, I'd like to just kind of read something that I've paraphrased from something I read earlier in this week, which basically tells us why we even did this series, okay? And here is the paraphrase. There are only two ways to read the Bible. either because it's about me or it's fundamentally about Jesus. The purpose of these Bible stories is not primarily to cause us to try hard to emulate an ancient hero. Rather, the purpose is to point to Jesus, to what he did for us perfectly and in our place. Jesus is the locus. He is the central focus of all of Scripture.
What is the Bible really about? Is the Bible basically about me and what I must do? Or is it basically about Jesus and what he has done? When you read in Luke and Acts how Jesus, in those 40 days, got his disciples together, 40 days before he ascended, after he was raised, what was he doing? Basically, he was saying, everything in the Old Testament is about me. He says, the reason you didn't understand what I was about was you didn't realize that everything in the prophets and the Psalms and the law was pointing to me. Do you believe the Bible is basically about you or basically about him? Is David and Goliath basically about you and how you can be like David and Goliath, or basically about him, the one who really took on the only giants that can really kill us? And so his victory is imputed to us. Who's it really about? That's the fundamental question. And when that happens, then you start to read the Bible new. You know, Jesus is the true and better Adam who passed the test in the garden, his garden, a much tougher garden, and whose obedience is imputed to us. Jesus is the true and better Abel, who, though innocently slain, has blood that cries out, not for our condemnation, but for our acquittal. Jesus is the true and better Abraham, who answered the call of God to leave all the comfortable and familiar and go into the void, not knowing whither he went. Jesus is the true and better Isaac, who was not just offered up by his father on the mount, but was truly sacrificed for us all, while God said to Abraham, "Now I know you love me, because you did not withhold your son, your only son, whom you love from me." Now we at the foot of the cross can say to God, "Now we know that you love me, because you did not withhold your son, your only son, whom you love from me." Jesus is the true and better Jacob, who wrestled and took the blow of justice we deserve, so we, like Jacob, only receive the wounds of grace that wake us up and discipline us. Jesus is the true and better Joseph, who is at the right hand of the king and forgives those who betrayed and sold him and uses his power to save him. Jesus is the true and better Moses, who stands in the gap between the people and the Lord and who mediates a new covenant. Jesus is the true and better rock of Moses, who, struck with the rod of God's justice, now gives us water in the desert. Jesus is the true and better Job. He's the truly innocent sufferer who then intercedes for and saves his friends. Jesus is the true and better David, whose victory becomes his people's victory, though they never lifted a stone to accomplish it themselves. Jesus is the true and better Esther, who didn't just risk losing an earthly palace, but lost the ultimate heavenly one, who didn't just risk his life, but gave his life. Who didn't just say, "If I perish, I perish," says, "When I perish, I'll perish for them, to save my people." Jesus is the true and better Jonah, who was cast out into the storm so we could be brought in. He's the real Passover lamb. He's the true temple, the true prophet, the true priest, the true king, the true sacrifice, the true lamb, the true light, the true bread. The Bible's not about you.